You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight, you've been hurt. What do you do? If you proceed, what comes next? What'll the process be like? If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or, if you're outside the local dialing area, call 866-798-8255. In the studio with me tonight are two attorneys, each with extensive and varied experience and quite a bit of knowledge to impart. With offices in Burlingame, Rolanda Pasquale, a former assistant district attorney as well as a former insurance defense lawyer and a former civil service commissioner, Rolando practices personal injury and employment litigation. James Thompson of Redwood City is a former private defender and practices personal injury, probate, and other civil litigation. Both of my guests are members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. But before we begin, I'm pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air is 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. And you won't be on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including Ron Rohde, who will be taking your calls on patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, questions about tax law or real estate law, Frank Adam from Pacifica. Janet Brewer, a certified specialist, will be there to take your calls on probate and estate planning. Jessica Chilick from San Francisco, about landlord-tenant law. And moreover, to take calls tomorrow, available are in family law, Janet Brewer, a certified specialist out of San Francisco, and Leon Bayer, a bankruptcy lawyer, both available. And they will have that information in the room, and I will give it to you later on tonight again. But if you have questions for my studio guests, our number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. But let me start by welcoming each of you to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening. Jim Thompson saying hi.
What I'd really like to start with is this. What should you do if you are injured by another person? And I'm talking very generically, whether it's someone who strikes you with their car or you're injured because they didn't maintain their premises and you slip and fall, whatever it may be, what's the first thing that you should probably do?
I think the first thing is make sure that you gather some evidence. And that is, I would take photographs. I would take my cell phone out and just take a bunch of pictures. One thing that I see with pictures is people always want to give me real close-ups, but it's important to take a few from far away to lay the scene and the groundwork. Get the names of the witnesses. And before you go see a lawyer, if you decide that you're going to see a lawyer, gather whatever evidence may be relevant to it, like documents, contracts, bills, copies of the insurance policies. And last but not least, I wouldn't admit at the scene that the accident was my fault. I would let my lawyers handle that or my insurance company handle that later. You don't need to do that 99% of the time.
Jim, do you have anything to add to that? Are you pretty much on the same page? Take pictures, document what you can, just be ready to talk about it.
Sure. There's a lot of things that would be going through your mind after an accident, especially if you're injured, pain, suffering, things that you don't really acknowledge right away sometimes. You're in a state of shock. So take a deep breath. Try to find out what happened and write down what you think happened if the best you can. And then secondly, if there's medical need, make sure the medical need is taken care of right away, an ambulance or whatever else has to be acquired, used to provide medical services. But don't be afraid to say you're hurt at any time, either on the job or off the job, car accident, anything, because you need to get that on the record that, yes, you did get hurt.
Sometimes, though, I mean, wouldn't you know right away if you're hurt? If you get If a car bumps into your car, wouldn't you know right away when they ask you, yes, my back hurts, or might there be some reason that you wouldn't know right away? Jim, you want to grab that one?
Yeah. Quite frankly, a lot of people, and most people, are kind of like heroes. They don't want to complain. They don't want to say they were hurt. Policemen ask, are you okay? You most likely say yes. Then you sit down. You might be dizzy. Don't be afraid to say, I don't feel right, or I don't feel normal. Those are injuries, whether or not they manifest themselves in an objective manner, like a cut or a bruise or something. You can still have injuries and still be hurt. The second thing is make sure that if there's an injury, that it's written up so that it's in the police report, it's reported to the DMV, that sort of thing. So there's more to that whole report, or that kind of gather the evidence scene than the normal person would think of. But take a deep breath and just kind of, if you have a scrap of paper, write down what your thoughts are, or if you have a witness, someone else in the car, talk about what's happening with you, with your friend, and vice versa, because it's very important. Later, those things come up to haunt you.
I think that there's an acronym that I use, and that is Report Aid, AID. The acronym is Authorities, Insurance, and Doctor. The authorities, it really depends on what you've got. If you were involved in an auto accident, you got to report it to the police. If you were involved in a slip and fall at some market, report it to the manager of the business. If it was at work, report it to your employer. If it was on the sidewalk, report it to the government. So report it to the authorities, whoever the authority agency is, or somebody needs to know about it. Because if you don't, if you were slip and fall at a big supermarket, and later you were to make a claim, the first thing they're going to say is, how do we know it even happened in our store if you don't report it to them right away? The next thing on aid is insurance, and that is the cooperation clause of your insurance policy requires that you immediately report incidents to them. If it's somebody else that injured you and you report it to the other guy's insurance company, that triggers obligations that insurance company has under the California Code of Regulations. They've got 15 days to acknowledge receipt of your claim, provide you claim forms, and begin their investigation. And if they accept liability, fault, they've got 30 days to send you payment, at least for the part that they've acknowledged. They've got 40 days to accept or deny the claim. The last part of aid, AID, is doctor. And that is, get yourself checked out. If you believe you have some injury, go to emergency room or call your family doctor. Don't wait, because I have seen many times when people later develop a condition that's more serious than they initially thought. If they didn't go to their doctor right away, two things will happen. Number one, the insurance company defending the claim is going to say, well, you probably weren't hurt in our accident. You may have been hurt somewhere else because you didn't report it right away. And then the second thing they're going to say is, we don't think you were hurt that bad, because anybody who's hurt that bad is going to go to the doctor right away.
So even what I'm getting from you guys is that even if you don't feel hurt right away, somebody hits your car with a good whack, even if you don't feel the pain right away, you need to report it now, because by the time that you realize something's happened, it may be too late to make that report, or at least make it as effectively.
Right. Yeah. And that is the law, by the way. Injuries in a car accident must be reported either to the DMV directly or to the CHP or some other officer at that time, and especially to your own insurance company. It's not necessarily you're going to go to jail kind of law, but you're supposed to do that in order to complete the right to claim your own insurance policy damages allowed. They require that you make those reports so that accident is on the record.
Yeah, DMV has a form called an SR1 form that you have to fill out within 30 days and file with them. If anybody was hurt in the accident, even if it wasn't you, if it's the other guy that's hurt, you have to file it. And or in a situation where there's property damage above some threshold, I can't remember if it's $500 or $750. But if it's more than that, or if anybody was hurt, you have an obligation to report it. Your own insurance company will often do that for you if you let them know.
We're talking about what to do when you're injured. If you have questions for James and Rolando, please call toll-free 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. 8255. Also, this is our once-a-month Call a Lawyer night. So while your legal rights broadcast on 91.7 FM is on the air, attorneys are available off the air until 8 o'clock tonight. You can call for a private, no-fee consultation on a variety of legal topics by calling 1-800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917 for a free off-air consultation. So you've established that you have some injury. You've filed a claim, or you've notified somebody, or you've at least, let's back up, you file a claim, or you've at least documented that something's happened. You've told the manager of the store, or the person who hit you, the police on the scene. What's the next step? What happens?
Hopefully you're going to get a response. The people who receive the claim, the store, your own insurance company, or the insurance company for the other party, or it may not even be an injury in a car accident. It might be you fell on someone's property or even a parking lot at a store. The idea is to notify those people, file your claim, and then you should get a response. Put a date for a response in your complaint, in your claim, and then hopefully someone will respond within that date. But meanwhile, if you have a matter that you think is serious after 3 or 4 or 5 days, you have something that's not going away, so to speak, then you definitely need to call an attorney.
How do you know whether you need to call an attorney on a given case? You don't know how serious it is, what's coming up. What's going to tell you you do or don't need to hire an attorney?
Well, you're allowed to represent yourself. And I think that's the key word, is allowed. Whether or not that's a good idea is a function of two things. Number one, whether or not you can afford to lose. And number two, whether or not you're seriously injured. You're allowed to walk to the grocery store. But if it's 2.5 miles away and it's the middle of winter and it's raining cats and dogs, personally, I'd take the bus. But you're allowed to represent yourself. If it's a small claim, if it's either the small claims court where they don't allow lawyers unless it's a corporation or something, they have limits of either $5,000 or $10,000 depending upon the type of case and whether or not you filed more than 2 claims that year. So that's one option. On the other hand, if you have serious injuries, while you're allowed to represent yourself, it's probably not a good idea to do that. I remember when I was a deputy DA, I had a fellow who had an excellent court-appointed lawyer, decided to fire him, and then decided to go to trial and represent himself. And we offered him 30 days in the county jail and to pay restitution to the victim. He turned that down and got 8 years in state prison. So probably wasn't a good idea to represent himself. But you're allowed to. You can represent yourself on the most serious. You could represent yourself on a murder case, but it may not be a good idea.
Usually doctors don't perform surgery on themselves. And I would imagine for much the same reason. Your judgment may be just a little bit impaired.
Just to add, and I'm not sure we can cover all aspects of this notice requirement or claim requirement, but if you were injured and it was because of a defective road condition, that would be a claim against the government that created the road. Or it might be a city park bench that falls apart. You might have a claim against the city. If it's a school claim, you might have something where your child went to school something broke, it injured your child. You might have a defendant or a claim against a school district. Or it might be a market where you slipped and fell on some oil on the floor. It's very difficult sometimes to identify exactly who the culprit is that caused this problem for you. And so you might end up with having to send notices out or claims out to several different entities. But at that point, you probably don't know for sure what actually caused your injury, and you might want to see a lawyer to find out.
Well, what difference does it make if it's the government as opposed to somebody else?
Well, lots of differences. First, your time limits are different. If it's a state or local government entity that's responsible, you have 6 months to file a claim. If you miss those 6 months, you can apply for permit, what they call it, leave. It's permission to present a late claim. You have to do that promptly and in no event more than a year from the day of the incident. But you're required to file a claim within 6 months. and then the government will respond to the claim. They have 45 days to respond. If, on the other hand, it's not a government entity, then it depends upon the type of case. But we've been talking about injuries, slip and falls or something, and we've been talking about auto accidents. So in those, it's 2 years, generally speaking. There are some slight differences. And, for example, if you're injured because of the negligence of an individual and it's not the person driving the car, but it's somebody else, you know, they're working on something and they drop something on your head, for example, then you might have more than 2 years if they're outside the state of California, because there's exceptions for the time when they're outside the state. But generally speaking, if it's the government, you got 6 months. And if it's a private individual for personal injury action, it's 2 years. And some of the other types of claims that you might have, like defamation, is only a year. Childhood sexual abuse is a whole different set of statutes.
Pretty much lifetime.
Not really. It can be. I mean, that gives you until your 26th birthday. And after that, it's within 3 years from the day the person discovers that as an adult, the injuries, the psychological injuries they've suffered, were the result of childhood sexual abuse. The one way you do get even more time on those cases, for example, would be if the person's convicted of a felony. Then, if the person responsible is convicted of a felony, you have 1 year from the day of judgment, but you may have up to 10 years for certain serious felonies.
And for those of you listening, you don't have to remember all those dates. What you need to remember is if there's a significant injury, someone can help you. You need to find out if you need to talk to a lawyer or if you want to try and go it on your own. There are entities available that will help guide you through at least making that decision. Lawyer referral services in every county of the state through the local bar association, and they will help you find a lawyer if, in fact, you need one. But you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. We are talking about the situation where you've been hurt and what do you do? What comes next? What's the experience going to be like? My guest tonight in studio, Rolando Pasquale, Jim Thompson. If you wish to ask them any questions, please feel free to call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Also, this is our monthly Call a Lawyer night. So, while you're listening to the broadcast, you can also call off-air and have attorneys lined up to answer many of your questions at 800-525-9917. And again, if you don't want to be on the air, it's 800-525-9917. And lastly, tomorrow, Thursday, June 28th, we have two attorneys standing by for your calls. Janet Frankel, a certified specialist in family law, will take family law questions from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533. Again, 415-362-9533. And Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will take calls on bankruptcy between 9 a.m. and noon at 800-477-3111. That's 800-477-3111. In either case, let them know that you're KALW listeners calling for your legal rights. So, we left off about the difference it makes if it's a government entity. Does it make a difference if it happened by accident or somebody on purpose?
Well, there are two other issues that we just kind of skipped over, and Rolando kind of touched on it, but that is the statute of limitations if you're a minor. If your child is injured in a car accident and may have an injury of some type that doesn't manifest itself for a while, or it's a permanent ache or something that doesn't go away, that child has until age of majority plus a statutory period for statute of limitations of regular adults that starts to run at the age 18. But putting that aside, again, the question is, those are technical things. If you're injured, or your child is injured especially, and you have to make a claim for your child, you've got to be very careful. And I want to say one more thing, just because it's kind of my pet teaching thing for people that I met and stuff, and that is every family, everybody should have a lawyer in their family that can help them decide whether or not this is a claim to be made against a government, against a private party, how much the claim might be, when to file it, the dates, and that sort of thing. So it's a matter of you have an attorney, call your attorney. Most attorneys for families are glad to talk about those basic issues for probably no charge at all for the first 20 minutes or half hour.
And with that, Dow from San Francisco, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to ask you this for the future reference. One time I walked along the sidewalk and I tripped on a little uneven sidewalk and I fell down and I got scraped up all over the place. But I thought, you know, since I tripped on it, it was my fault, so I didn't do anything. And so in the future, if something like that happened, to whom should I complain, or which city, or the people who live there, or what should I do?
Dow, thank you. Would one of you like to cover that?
I can take it.
Sure.
Or do you want to take it, Jim?
I'm just going to say the sidewalk, you have to determine, first of all, who put the sidewalk in, who maintains it, and if there was a defect in the sidewalk, either through nature, it caused part of it to split and crack up, or it was a defect in the engineering and design of the sidewalk. So those are some very difficult issues. Most of the time it's a city sidewalk or government put it in. Most of the time it's something like a tree root or something that caused it to break. Generally speaking, there's a size of a crack and a tripping hazard if the crack is, I think, is a quarter or three-eighths of an inch high. There's certain standards that you might have on your side so that if it's a crack in the sidewalk, the city put it in, and you trip on that crack, then you make your claim against the city, and there might be liability because the crack is just there and the city should have maintained the sidewalk. But that's a very, very quick analysis, and I'm sure that somebody out there can say, that's not the way it is. So difficult to say. But you might have had a case, and you might not have filed an action against the city or against anyone else, and you may be barred at this time.
Well, so the first thing, I think it's 3/4 of an inch. If it's less than 3/4 of an inch, generally speaking, the law considers that to be what they call a trivial defect. I may be wrong on the amount, but I'm pretty sure it's 3/4 of an inch. The thing that I would do would be, as Jim said, I would find out who owns and maintains a sidewalk. Assuming it was on a public street, I would definitely notify the city, and I would make a claim. It doesn't cost you anything to make a claim against the government entity that's handling that sidewalk. The next thing I would do would be I would check the local codes, because you may find that there are rules. Some municipalities, some cities, some counties will have rules that say to the property owner, you have to maintain the sidewalk in front of your house. The third thing I would do would be find out what's causing, as Jim mentioned, what's causing that defect in the sidewalk. If it's being pushed up by a tree, then you may have some liability as to somebody not maintaining that tree or not maintaining the tree roots. So I would look at how much the defect is. I would look at who's responsible for maintaining that portion of the sidewalk, make a claim with the government entity, and then go forward from there.
Dow, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. We talked about the differences if somebody was doing something on purpose or not, and what difference if it's a government or somebody else. Does it make a difference when it happens at work?
Sure. If it happens at work, it depends upon whose negligence it is. The thing about workers' compensation is workers' compensation takes something and also gives something away.
When you say workers' compensation, what are we talking about?
So if you're hurt on the job, you have a workers' comp claim. And that system, the workers' compensation system, takes something and gives something. What it gives you is that you don't have to prove whose fault it was. If I was injured on the job because I was careless and I hurt myself, I still have a workers' comp claim, and I have a year to file that. But what I don't get from that system is I don't get a jury trial. I don't get to go to the superior court. Instead, if it's strictly a workers' comp claim where I just hurt myself because I was foolish, I have to go to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. And I also don't get money for pain and suffering, which is the biggest component typically of a personal injury case. If, on the other hand, you're injured because of the negligence or the carelessness of some other entity that's not your employer or somebody else who's not a co-employee, then you may have two cases going on at the same time. You may have a claim in superior court where you can say, hey, you know, you're the delivery guy for such and such company, and you were careless, and while I was working my job at this grocery store, I was hurt. So I have a workers' comp claim regarding my grocery store employment, but I also have a claim against the delivery company because their employee was negligent. And Jim, I know you've done a lot of workers' comp case, and you can probably add a lot more to that.
Well, I tell you what, there's tons of literature that we could cite on all these issues. But back to that distinctive difference, the workers' compensation claim is when you're injured while you're in the course of employment, or it arises out of the employment relationship with your employer. Then you have a claim to have that employer. The job might be on the premises owned by the employer, or you might be working for the employer installing a sprinkler system at someone else's house. In any event, if you're working and you're injured on the job, not only you don't have to prove negligence, you also get your medical bills and potentially a rating, a disability rating, if that injury ultimately deters or affects you or keeps you from working to your full capacity. So there's a lot of benefits with workers' compensation. But again, the average person doesn't see those opportunities, or it's not a thing that they necessarily know about. So a good lawyer can tell you, okay, you have a car accident, you have a tree fell on you, or you have something that you breathed in, or you have a dust problem. But was it a workers' compensation case, or was it just simple negligence against a third party? Those are tough issues to describe in a discussion like this. But the best idea is simply to, like I say, have a good lawyer on your side, even before you get hurt. Know a lawyer. And that lawyer can tell you, that, oh, I don't do that, but I have a good lawyer I can refer you to.
Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. This is Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight is, what do you do if you've been hurt? What do you do next? And if you do go forward with some kind of a case or a claim, what's the process going to be like? We're going to be taking that up again in a moment. If you have questions for my guests, our number right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. And again, that's 415-841-4134. Also, this is our once-a-month Call a Lawyer Night. So while your legal rights broadcast on 91.7 FM or online at KALW.org, attorneys are standing by off the air to take your calls for a consultation on a variety of legal topics. As I mentioned earlier, we have several attorneys standing by. We have Ron Rohde of Palo Alto talking about patent and aviation or lemon law. Janet Brewer, also of Palo Alto, about estate planning and probate. Frank Adam of Pacifica to talk about tax law or real estate law. Jessica Chilick from San Francisco, who can talk about landlord-tenant law. Additionally, tomorrow we have available to take your calls Janet Frankel, certified specialist in family law. She will take your calls from 9 to 11 at 415-362-9533. Or Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy, will take bankruptcy calls between 9 a.m. and noon at 800-477-3111. For either Janet Frankel or Leon Baer, be sure to tell them that you're a KALW listener and that you listen to Your Legal Rights. And we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So again, we're talking about what to do if you've been injured. And my question to both of you is, who's my case against? Is it against the other person's insurance company? Is it against the other person? Exactly where does that go?
So your claim is against the other person. But what happens is this. In a typical liability case where you're hurt somehow, you're hurt physically because somebody else was careless, or under some circumstances you got hurt and it's somebody else's fault. The other person, if they have insurance, their insurance company has a obligation to that policyholder to defend and indemnify claims. So defend means they'll hire a lawyer to defend the claim, they'll investigate the claim, blah, blah, blah. Indemnify means that they will take care of the financial responsibility on behalf of their policyholder to you. So I was hurt and I've got a broken foot and I've got $10,000 in medical bills. And the reason I broke my foot is because Sam Smith had Sam Smith's Market and they left banana peels on the floor and I slipped and I fell and I broke my leg. Or alternatively, I broke my leg in a car crash because Sam Smith crashed into me. So now what I do is I'm presenting, if I have to file a lawsuit, I'm suing Sam Smith because he operated the grocery store or he drove the car that hurt me. The claim, however, is being handled by the insurance company, but you're not going to be suing his or her insurance company. The person you're going to be suing, be it in small claims court, if it's a smaller case, or in superior court, if it's a more serious case where you need to hire a lawyer, the person you're going to be suing is Mr. Smith.
We've been talking about nuts and bolts. Let's circle back and talk about the big picture. You've been hurt. You slip in the market. You know you may have twisted your ankle or you may have hit the ground hard. What's the first thing you should be doing? Obviously, you report it. But then what? What do you do?
Well, obviously, you're supposed to be taking care of yourself. So the first thing you should do is make sure your injury is defined. What happened to you? Don't even get up off the floor until you know you haven't broken your hip or something of that nature. So the medical checking yourself out for a medical injury. The store itself will come over and take care of you. If you want to stay on the floor until that agent at the store gets there, that might not be a bad idea. If there's something on the floor, it might be a broken mayonnaise bottle or something that you might have slipped on or slipped in that substance. See if you can document that. Even ask the store to take a picture. The bottom line is most defendants in stores or governments or whatever, they're looking for you to say what happened. And the more you can prove what happened, it might be another witness at the checkout stand, or it might be another person, or it might be the person that came to clean the store up, the mess on the floor up. You need to know who that person is. If you can get their address and phone number, they're a witness that can help you tell the story. Those witnesses can disappear. So you need to start saying, as soon as you figure out what's wrong with your body, what's happened to me, and what happened, and where's the fault, if any, and who is here to testify to help me out.
Yeah, I agree with everything Jim said, except for one thing, and that is I wouldn't ask them to take the picture for me, because while the law is going to be later that I can get that picture for you in a lawsuit, there's going to be a fight. And it also depends, because there is some case law, some case authority, that says if that reveals thoughts and impressions that are taken for the purpose of communicating to the lawyer, I might not be able to get it. 99 out of 100 times I'm going to get that picture, but I would say 90 out of 100 times we're going to have to file a lawsuit if they got the picture. So I would prefer that even if they're going to take their pictures, that's fine. Take your own pictures, because these days everybody's got a cell phone.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about other types of cases. You have an auto accident case. What can you do if you're in a car accident and the other person doesn't have insurance?
If the other person doesn't have insurance, the first thing you should do is check your policy of insurance. The one thing that everybody should have in California these days is called uninsured motorist. If you have an uninsured motorist policy in the state of California, what that policy says is that if you are involved in an injury or if you receive an injury as a result of an automobile incident, then your insurance company will step into the shoes of the person responsible and pay you on their behalf. So you can make a claim with your own insurance company. You're going to have to prove that the other driver didn't have insurance. And if it's a hit and run, you're going to be able to prove it that way by virtue of the fact that they fled from the scene. But once you've proven that they didn't have insurance, your policy will kick in. That doesn't mean your insurance company will pay you the full amount that you're entitled to. You're probably going to have to fight for it. And frankly, these days, I am finding that I'm fighting just as hard with some of these insurance companies on uninsured motorist cases as I am in cases where they're representing their own insured. The other thing is that under California law, any policy that has uninsured motorist also has underinsured motorist. And what that means is, so let's assume that the person who injures you has insurance, but not enough. They've got a $15,000 policy, let's say, a $15,30 policy, and you exhaust their limits, right? You get them to pay you the $15,000 because you have serious injuries. Underinsured motorist says that now your insurance company will step in. They'll get a credit for that $15,000. They can deduct that. But your insurance policy is now available to you, the amount of underinsured motorist that you purchased. So the first thing to do, if the other guy doesn't have insurance, is number one, make sure you're going to be able to prove that. That goes back to the SR1 form that Jim and I were talking about earlier. The second thing is you're going to notify your own insurance company. And there are time limits for presenting that claim, but you can do that. And that provides for binding arbitration. You don't even go into superior court on that.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. We're talking about what to do. You've been hurt. What do you do next? What's the process going to be like? It's also our Call a Lawyer night. So while you're listening to the broadcast on 91.7 FM or at KALW.org, we have attorneys available off the air until 8 o'clock tonight for a private, no-fee consultation on a variety of legal topics. And again tonight, we have Jessica Chilick from San Francisco, who's there to answer your questions about landlord-tenant. Janet Brewer of Palo Alto, who can talk to you about estate planning and probate issues. Frank Adam from Pacifica, who's there to talk about tax law, real estate law. And never least, Ron Rohde, who can answer your questions about patent law, aviation law, lemon law, or BBB arbitration. You can reach our lawyers off air at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. If you have a question for my guests, Rolando and James, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. No cost for the advice, no cost for the call. 866-798-8255. So we've talked a little bit about getting it started and reporting it. Let's talk a little bit about what this process is going to be like. What kind of a response do you expect? You've told the store, the store manager, or maybe the police about the other driver. What's going to happen next?
Well, the first thing you got to think about, put yourself in the shoes of that store or of that insurance company. I used to represent them when I started my career. I don't anymore, but I used to. They are faced day in and day out with fraudulent claims. Kind of to tell you an aside, I had a lawyer tell me at a bar function event that she was working with a local government agency. And one of the things that they were doing was they were filming doing a training session for a bus accident. So they had all these people pretending that they were being hurt. They had paramedics responding. It was one of these drills so that they get better at responding to a serious situation where there's a crash.
And I just want to be really clear. When you talk about a drill, you're talking about the emergency responders responding. You're not talking about telling insurance attorneys or for that matter, plaintiff's attorney about running out there with business cards, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If a lawyer runs out to you with a business card, you should report them to the state bar. That's unethical conduct, and they shouldn't be doing that. Or if somebody comes out and what they're what are called runners or cappers, and they come up to you, especially if somebody's seriously hurt or if you've had a death in the family, and somebody comes up to you and does that, that's the kind of conduct that those of us who try to do a good job for our clients deeply resent. But anyway, so what they were doing was they were having a drill for the purpose of training emergency responders. While they were having this drill, people started coming up to them and saying, I was on that bus, and I'm hurt. And they were trying to present fraudulent claims. That has gotten so out of control in some areas that I heard a story that in New York, for example, the bus drivers were instructed when they were involved in an auto accident to lock the doors and not let people off the bus and inventory who was on the bus for purposes of the claims, because they were getting so many claims that exceeded the number of passengers on the bus. And so put yourself in the shoes of the defendant for a minute, or the insurance companies. You can't tell when the claim comes in whether or not this is somebody who's legitimately hurt or whether or not this is just another phony baloney. And so, unfortunately, they, like all the rest of us, become jaded. There's people on my side of the fence who believe that all the insurance companies are evil and all the claims adjusters are evil. And I can tell you that that's not the case, though sometimes I feel like it is, depending on who I'm dealing with. But by and large, it's not. And so put yourself in their shoes and understand that they're going to want documentation. They're trying to do their job. They are also not in the process of losing money. So they're not interested in simply paying out like a cash register for anybody who calls them with a claim, even if you were hurt. So depending upon how seriously you're hurt and depending upon the amount of insurance that's available, typically a store is going to have a large policy, but the driver who hit you might not. So depending upon how seriously you're hurt and the amount of insurance that's available, that may be a protracted fight.
Just one quick question, quick point, and Rolanda's absolutely right. There is no lawyer out there that would make a false claim on behalf of an injured plaintiff. Quite frankly, that is like a no-no, and lawyers who are experienced are very careful not only to not make a false claim, but not to make a false statement as to the extent of injuries to their party, or not to disclose prior injuries, pre-existing conditions that injured party might have had. The idea of the lawyer being there to tell the truth for that injured party is really a big straw step forward for someone who's injured. Some people would like to try and do it by themselves to save the attorney's fees. That's fine. No problem. But in the long run, if you have a serious injury, starting off on the right foot, if there's an insurance company involved, starting off on the right foot with that insurance company is a very good positive way to get the ball rolling on your behalf.
So what are you going to experience? You have filed the claim. You have your lawyer file a claim. Undoubtedly, you're going to get some response. What are you going to experience? As the person who was injured, what can you really expect?
So what I tell my clients, Jeff, is I tell them that we're not going to talk about evaluating the size of your claim, and we're not going to talk about settling your claim until you're okay. There is no law that prevents an insurance company from paying you for future medical bills, for settling today and saying we're going to pay your medical bills for life. But there's no law that requires them to do that. Workers' comp is different. So setting that aside, because in workers' comp they do that, but I don't do workers' comp law. In personal injury cases, in third-party cases, third-party being where you're simply injured by some stranger, in those cases, the litmus test, what we judge all these things by, is what would happen if we went to trial. And if we went to trial, the jury would be told, determine how much this case is worth, and if there is future pain and suffering or future damages, give an amount for that. So the first thing you do is you want to make sure that you've got a handle on the extent of your injuries, because the day that you resolve your claim with the insurance company, they're going to give you a contract. And the contract is going to say, we're paying you these dollars, be it $1 or $1 million, and we are never going to hear from you again.
So the next day, your leg falls off as a result of the injury, but you've already settled it.
Too bad. Too bad, so sad.
Ernie from San Rafael, you're on your legal rights. Welcome. Ernie, are you still with us? Ernie, please feel free to call us back. It seems like we've dropped the call. We'd be glad to circle back to you if you call us right back. So, you've presumably filed your claim. You get some kind of a response for them. You've instructed the person you're representing to take care of themselves first, to take care of the injury or whatever they need to do for their own medical use. At some point, the two sides are going to be talking or arguing. What are they going to experience?
Well, it depends upon the severity of the claim. What I tell people is that settling your case, once we have a handle on what the extent of your damages are, we know how much your medical bills are, we know if there's any claims for reimbursement called liens, we know how much your wage loss is, we know what your prognosis is. In other words, what the doctor tells us is reasonably going to be your future. Now we can decide on the value of your claim. And what happens then is that your lawyer will put together a package of information and your lawyer will present it to the insurance company, usually by letter. And that becomes really no different than buying and selling a used car. So if somebody is to leave town and give you the keys to their car and say, sell it, you're going to negotiate. And if you ask for a real high price, you're not going to get any takers.
Ernie, thank you for getting back to us. You're on your legal rights.
Thank you. I was teaching, and after class, going home, fell at a stairway in the building and severely damaged my knee. I had to be hospitalized and had surgery. I was asked subsequently if I was going to file, what was it, for workman's comp. And there was nothing taken out of my salary, and I didn't have to pay for any medical bills, whatever. I'm just wondering if I should have sued for pain and suffering because the stairway was not marked. In other words, it was very easy to fall on the stairway. There was no signal of where the stair ended. So, in other words, can you waive workman's comp and then sue for pain and suffering, even if all your medical bills are covered?
Thank you, Ernie, and we'll give you your answer over the air and appreciate your question. So I guess the two questions Ernie asked are, one, was he covered by workers' comp, or is that somehow waived because they didn't get it? And secondly, should he have gone after pain and suffering? Did he miss out on anything?
Well, Ernie, there are a couple of components to your question that are really vital, and that is you were teaching, I'm assuming it's a public teaching facility, and the building was owned by the government school district. Is that true?
It was actually UCSF.
Okay, but the building was owned and maintained by UCSF. The stairway was in a UCSF building.
Yes.
Okay. The question is, if there was a defect in the stairway, and the stairway was owned and maintained by the UCSF, that's a governmental entity that people don't think of schools as being governments, but they are run by the UC system, for example. In any event, if you fell on that stairway because of a defect and you went to the doctor, he treated you, and your bills were submitted to the building owner, maintaining people, the UCSF people, they would have paid those bills, all of those bills, and you should have been received the opportunity to get temporary disability payments. You were in a building. There's a coming and going rule, but you were still on the employer's site, work site, you were coming down the stairs, you were entitled to temporary disability payments. That's for the period of time until your condition becomes permanent and stationary. And then at the point when it becomes permanent and stationary, you're entitled to a rating. And if you recovered totally 100%, your rating may be a minimal 2 or 3% or nothing at all. In any event, your bills would have been paid for by the workers' comp carrier. Now, you would have been entitled to a permanent disability rating if that injury caused you to have an arthritic change or something else that it lightened up a condition that you had that was otherwise dormant for a long period of time. These are all serious questions, but the average person like yourself needs to see an attorney about that. You may, if this injury was not too far back in time, and there was acknowledgement that you did hurt yourself on the job, and employers have to file what they call a statement of work injury, first injury, of your first injury, and when the injury happened, and what the extent, nature and extent of that injury was. But assuming they did that, then you have a period of up to 5 years to make a claim for permanent disability or further medical treatment. These are all complicated issues, though, and most attorneys don't even know the answers to these matters. So I'd leave you with this. If this happened within the last 4 or 5 years, you might still have an opportunity to make that workers' compensation claim. If that damaged sidewalk was because of a third-party design defect or something, then you might be barred because the actual time period for a personal injury claim against a personal a private party, you'd be barred. In any event, that's a short statement, and I'm sure Rolando might say, you know, the basic rule of make sure you document what happened and you have some kind of a statement that the people who own the building acknowledge that you did hurt yourself there. Those are the minimal things you should have. But I think that, Rolando, you can pick up from there, and if there's something more icing you want to put on the cake, let's do it.
The only thing I would say is you don't have a choice. Either workers' comp is your exclusive remedy if he worked for UCSF and it was all UCSF doing something wrong. It's not like you can waive or decide to go to Superior Court. You may be stuck. But I think we have another caller.
We do. Before we introduce, and Ernie, thank you for your call. Before we go to our next caller, let me take this one last opportunity to remind everyone, this is our once-a-month Call a Lawyer night. So while you're listening to us on the air, we have attorneys available off the air until 8 o'clock tonight for a private, no-fee, off-the-air consultation on a variety of legal topics. You can reach them at 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Paula from Alameda, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you very much. I have a question to follow up on the earlier question where the caller asked about a fall on a sidewalk, I believe. And I've been wondering about this for some time because I live in a home with on a very narrow street. And the sidewalk has been heavily damaged for many, many years, I believe because for many years cars would park on the street because it's so narrow. That was just how people dealt with it. And the city, perhaps 10 years ago, on the urging, I believe, of several neighbors who wrote many letters, finally put up signs, so now it's only permitted to park on one side of the street, but the damage from all those years was never repaired. And my understanding is that it's the homeowner who needs to pay for the sidewalks, and nobody's repaired the sidewalks, of course. It's a huge bill. And I just wonder what you could say to help me understand if somebody were to fall at this point, would it be the homeowner's insurance that would have to cover any injuries?
So, Paula, the answer to your question is it depends upon who's responsible for maintaining that sidewalk. If, let's assume, I don't know what city this is in, but let's assume you're right, and let's assume that it is the city's responsibility to maintain the sidewalk, then they would be the legal entity that would be responsible or primarily responsible for that incident. What I would do would be I would write them a letter to put them on what they call legal notice of this problem. Take pictures, write them a letter, and say, look, somebody's going to get hurt. And if you really want fast action from a government entity, send a copy to the press.
Oh, I see. Well, my understanding is that the homeowner must maintain those sidewalks, that is, to fix them, to pay for them to be fixed, and it's very expensive. But the reason, in my opinion, that these sidewalks are so badly damaged is because for years there was no enforcement about the requirement that cars park on the street, not on the sidewalk. You know?
Well, the issue then would be whether or not somebody was notifying the city of this enforcement problem. But if you're a tenant in that area, I would notify my landlord, and I would send them a copy of if you found, if somebody at the city's telling you that the property owner is responsible for that sidewalk, they'd be more than happy, I'm sure, to cite you, to give you the name of the code and the code number. You can go to a public library or nowadays get it online. And I would send that to the landlord, and I would say, look, you know, municipal code section blah, blah, blah says you have to take care of this, and now there's a dangerous condition here.
Paula, thank you for your question, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much.
And with that, we're about out of time, but I wanted to give each of you an opportunity, if you want to take a very short moment or two to sum up anything you feel was left out. Any last-minute advice?
I'm going to let Jim do that. I'm going to remain silent.
Well, my advice, and I hate to fall back on this, it's like a crutch, I guess. The last caller, Paula, for example, if that defective condition on the sidewalk was caused by some human error or some negligence, you have to get an expert to say what caused that defective condition, whether it was a crack in the sidewalk or the sidewalk was just worn down to nothing, was whatever. Who was supposed to fix that crack? Who originally put the sidewalk in there? Who's the responsible party? And Paula, sometimes you might find out that it is the city. They have an agreement that even the area up to the curb, for bushes, trees, that sort of thing, even though the landlord might own the property, you might, but the obligation to maintain and repair that property area, it might be the city or it might be some other entity. You've got to find these things out. It takes an attorney sometimes to help you with that.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. My guests tonight have been Rolando Pasquale and Burlingame. Rolando practices personal injury and employment litigation. You can find Rolando at www.lawsuite.net. And James Thompson from Redwood City, also practicing personal injury, probate, and other civil litigation. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us. I'd also like to thank our attorney volunteers for putting on, once again, Call a Lawyer Night. Ron Rohde of Palo Alto, Frank Adam of Pacifica, Janet Brewer from Palo Alto, Jessica Chilick from San Francisco, and again, taking calls tomorrow, Janet Frankel from San Francisco and Leon Bayer from Los Angeles. Janet will take calls in family law. Leon will take calls for bankruptcy, and mention to either of them your KALW listeners. Again, finally, thanks to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. Next week, in commemoration of our nation's birthday and the 4th of July holiday, we will not be on the air, but we'll return 2 weeks from tonight, where we will talk about immigration in these tough times, children being separated from their parents, the travel ban that was upheld, exactly what we do to survive that. Again, this has been Your Legal Rights on 91.7 KALW in San Francisco. Thank you for listening. I'm Jeff Hayden.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.